From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour as we march on through Lent. And greatly appreciate you all being with us here as we are in the midst of our 24th year on the air, and it's a labor of love, and it's a lot of people helped us get here, including Bishop Wiegand, who founded it, Bishop Emeritus William Wiegand, and Bishop Soto has been so supportive and is a regular guest on this program, and all the wonderful underwriters and all the wonderful guests, and especially you, the listeners. And speaking of wonderful guests, this is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. And we're rejoicing to have Father Michael Kiernan on the other end of the phone. Father, good day to you.
Well, good day to you, Bob, and all of your listeners today. It's always a joy to be in the opportunity to evangelize and to share the good news with our people who listen to your radio show, Bishop Show. So delighted to be here, yeah.
Well, speaking of good news, last week we celebrated St. Patrick's Day, and of course he's the patron of the Diocese of Sacramento, and our bishop, Jaime Soto, was kind enough to issue a dispensation, so all of us, I think you had to be Irish Catholic to get the dispensation, but all the Irish Catholics were very happy about, and everybody was very happy. It brought some joy to all of us that we should do, you know, an act of charity, an act of sacrifice in place of giving up meat on Friday in Lent. The Irish put St. Patrick's Day right in the middle of Lent, always.
Right there, you never escape it. Yes,
you can't escape it.
No matter how early it comes or late it comes, but St. Patrick is in there in the middle of it.
It's always in Lent, and about once every 7 years, of course, it falls on a Friday.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, that was great that Bishop gave that dispensation. Well appreciated, and you know, in many ways, I suppose sometimes people think of the church as being harsh or hard or
right.
difficult or make life but actually if you look at things you find that actually the church is a very wise and caring mother, and so I think the bishop's action there is, you know, just a very nice thing to say, well, it just happened that way. It 17 could have been on Thursday or Saturday or whatever, but it just happened to fall on Friday. And of course St. Patrick is probably one of the most influential men in the history of the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can't, we couldn't imagine the importance of St. Patrick, because had he not gone to Ireland and converted the Irish people there, then centuries later, when the faith was basically wiped out in Europe in many ways by the barbarians coming down from modern-day Sweden and Norway and all that area, the Irish monks went all abroad. And,
yes.
And, of course, you think of in the modern world, influence on the United States, the influence on the Philippines and Africa and so on. I mean, just the influence of over the centuries of St. Patrick, it's hard to imagine almost anybody that had more direct or indirect influence than he. So in that sense, it was a beautiful thing to celebrate this enormously humble and good and decent man who made Ireland into what was called later on a land of saints and scholars.
Yes, yeah, and you know, and right here in the Diocese of Sacramento, of course, tremendous Irish influence. I've said before, when I was growing up, in the Diocese of Sacramento, the term Irish priest was redundant.
Indeed.
And the Sisters of Mercy, of course, and their contributions here in Sacramento since 1857. So much so that they've got a memorial to them outside the state capitol.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, and St. Patrick, the patron, of course, the diocese and so on. So, wonderful contribution. I mean, just amazing, beautiful thing, yeah.
Did he really drive the snakes out of Ireland?
Well, some say he did, but some say they came back, a different form of snakes nowadays. some wit there said that a different form of snake has got back, you know. People use the word snake in a variety of ways. But,
yes, indeed.
Anyway, I certainly didn't experience any snakes when I was growing up, and maybe it is that the climate there or whatever just never allowed for that type of creature to be there. But
it'd be hard to swim there, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. So no snakes, but lots of other challenges for sure, and especially in modern-day Ireland where the faith is taking a beating. But on the other hand, there's a little indications that some people are very dedicated to it, and it may get smaller, but little St. Patrick's influence will, I'm sure, over the decades and centuries to come, continue to be a blessing.
You know, we hear that about the church and Ireland, and it's been a number of years since I was there. I mean, I didn't live there ever. I visited there, but is it that just a malady all over the world? Isn't just the Catholic Church? It's people falling away from religion, but what? How do you attribute, you went to seminary in Ireland, you grew up in Ireland, you came to the United States, of course, to serve, but how do you attribute that, what's going on with the church in Ireland?
Well, I think something like that is actually going on with the church in Poland, too,
mm-hmm.
And part of it would be the, you know, in the for centuries to be Irish was to be Catholic and to be fighting the British and the Crown and all of that. And so the two things became identified very closely, the nationalism and Catholicism. And then, of course, in 1916, when the independence came for most of Ireland, things changed. And then, of course, European influence and the European community and, you know, the 60s and the 80s and all the things since. So the standard of living, the new opportunities that people had, and so just a variety of things, which, as you say, is affecting all parts of the world, or certainly all parts of the Western world, and, you know, Europe and the States and so on. But part of it, I often think about this, is that in some ways, you know, our Catholic faith had been taken for granted almost. I mean, we did have schools and we taught and so on, but I often felt our people were not that well educated in the faith in my time growing up, and it was sort of taken for granted that, of course, it's here and it'll always be here, and you don't do anything about it, you know. It's almost like your health, you know, you mm-hmm. sort of assume you'll always be healthy, but maybe not unless you take care of yourself. You know that old saying, if I had thought I was going to live this long, I'd have taken better care of myself.
Right.
Well, the same with the faith. I think it was just supposed to be learned by osmosis and stuff, but it wasn't just really strong as well as it could have been. But and then, of course, when the winds of change came, and Ireland had a tremendous hard time with the whole abuse situation. Was it?
Sure.
The disaster every place, but in a small community there, one of the problems that you could often have is that, you could have people on both sides, that the abuser, you knew him, and on the other hand, the abused, you knew him or her. And so it was, people were in a quandary, and even the whole of Ireland is small, and people talk, and again, if it was in a small community, a rural community, often, sure. You know, then it just had an enormous impact. So a variety of things, but it's certainly the whole idea of the Celtic tiger, as it was called, and the wealth, and the whole way of life over there changed. I mean, when I was a boy, You could go into people's houses. Nobody ever thought of locking the door. And if you were short some sugar or salt or something like that, you know, that you realized you needed it right now and you couldn't have time to go to the store, you could just walk over to your neighbor's house, and whether they were there or not, you walk in, take what you need, and go home.
Right.
But now everything is locked, and everything is very, you know, a lot of violence, a lot of drugs, a lot of craziness. And so it's been a difficult time for them. Vocations, of course, are really, really, really bad there. And
most of the seminaries have closed?
Yeah, most of the seminaries have closed, except for one, the big one, but even that doesn't have the numbers it used to have.
And which one is that?
That's Maynooth.
Maynooth, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just outside Dublin there. And then there's real concern in the parishes and the dioceses that many of them have priests, you know, and they're 60s and 70s, and not too many in the of the young priests. So it's a great challenge for that church, but the prayers of St. Patrick and St. Bridget. St. Bridget was actually a sidekick of St. Patrick. She was around the same time,
mm-hmm.
and she was a powerful woman. She probably may have been a wealthy woman. She might have been some sort of a chieftain in some ways, and so she had a lot of influence on the country, and what was amazing, actually, was the way that Patrick, because he had a great opportunity to understand the people, because he had been a slave there for some years. But then when he came, he was able to meet with the chieftains, the king, the high people in position, even the Druids, you know, that was the Druid religion, pagan religion there. But somehow he was able to connect with them and do a marvelous work of understanding them and actually cajoling them into seeing that what he was offering could be reconciled in many ways with what they had. And so over a very short period of time, without any of the fighting and all sorts of things that often take place when religion comes to a new country, he was able to convert the country very rapidly. Not that he didn't have a lot of the troubles and people trying to kill him and all these other things. He went through all sorts of sufferings with that. But he never gave up, and in the space of a very short time, he was able to go from one end of the country to another and make it all. But again, it was a lot of this. The Catholic Church, of course, has been marvelous at throughout the centuries, working with the culture, the civilization, and
mm-hmm.
and you know, in some ways, like Italian Catholics are a little different than Portuguese Catholics, and Portuguese Catholics than Brazilian Catholics. They're all the same, and so on. But you know, they have their own different types of saints, as it were, and devotionals, and even style. And obviously, the Irish were quite like that as well. And of course, they're one of the great claims to fame is the changing of the whole understanding of confession to making it into the, to extent what we have today. I mean, it used to be a lot different thing than public penances and all that other stuff, but they made it more of a simple and individual action like we have today.
Well, we as a family have done our best to keep the Irish tradition alive. We have a Erin Colleen, a Molly, a Maeve, Queen Maeve, we call her.
Well,
a Mick,
yes, indeed.
A Mick and a Theodore and a Molly. We've got them all.
Wonderful. Well, you have a beautiful family, and God bless you, Bob, and your dear wife for what you've done. And you seem to be very blessed in that your children seem to be holding on to the faith, because that's a real sad thing that is happening. And it seems to me they're like the finest families and parents that I know, just lovely people. Somehow their children and their grandchildren are not following through.
Well, you know, it's funny. Yeah, we feel very blessed that they've held on to the faith. And one of our daughters just got a job at Safeway, a part-time job. She's a student at Sacramento City College in Davis. So they have a campus in Davis, but she got a job at the local Safeway part-time to work around her classes. And And they come out with their schedule every week, and they don't have much control over it. They don't schedule them when they have class or something, but they can request that they need a specific day off if something's happening. You know, maybe they have a doctor's appointment or something. And and so I was talking to her one day, and she said, I requested a day off next week. This was about a month ago. And I said, really? What do you have something special going on at school or what? And she said, no, it's Ash Wednesday. And I was like, I just spontaneously started crying, you know, because this was a new job and she's kind of shy. You know, she doesn't like to ask for a day off or draw any attention to herself. And it was so important to her that she have Ash Wednesday off, because so she could for sure go to Mass, because she wouldn't know if they were going to schedule her, what time they might schedule her. They might schedule her. And she just, and good for Safeway for giving her the day off.
Well, isn't that a great thing? You know, that's a form of evangelization, and I'm sure, you know, her friends and even the people there at Safeway and so on, they can notice these things.
Sure,
and
they do. Yep.
We've often talked about living our faith and standing up for our faith, and I know here at Beale Air Force, where I serve, we had a lady there, oh, maybe 6 months ago now or so. She came in to talk, and she was in an environment where sometimes people would be critical of the church and so on. And she herself hadn't been doing very well. She was actually born in Mexico and baptized in Mexico, but then moved here as a young child and lived her life and sort of had the faith thing and so on, but didn't take it too serious. But didn't drop it. And anyway, in the course of this, she had sort of a revelation. And she came in to talk to our religious education person here and myself. And to make a long story short, she really got involved in classes and some of that. And then she wanted to get her marriage blessed. And then she had never been confirmed. So she's going to be deployed pretty soon. So we had to get her confirmed before our bishop comes here to do the ceremony. So we... we're able to sneak her into the confirmation over at St. Joseph's in North Sacramento a couple of Saturdays ago. And, you know, what was amazing was that she still had a good memory of her Mexican roots. And so when she went to that church, you know, St. Joseph's Sacramento, you could be in downtown Guadalajara because it's so Hispanic. And there was a guy out there selling food after the Mass, and oh, she just had to go over and get that. Not that she was that hungry, but just to participate and like of old. So those are things that it's amazing how, you know, with all the challenges we face, that there's still quite a few people who are taking it very serious. And just working with a young man there an hour ago in regard to having his marriage blessed and all of that, that he just had got married civilly but hadn't got around to it. And suddenly it struck him that this was an obligation he had and that he wanted to receive the grace of the sacrament of marriage. And so we'll have a little ceremony for him pretty soon and bless his marriage and him and his wife and a little daughter and so on. So good things keep happening. Some challenges for sure, but we always look on the bright side and live by faith.
Yes, one of my daughters who's now in college at UC Santa Cruz, a few years ago, she said, "Can we go to Mass at St. Paul's in Knight's Landing?" And I said, "Sure, but why?" It's a very sweet, small little church, and you know. A lot of hardworking people go to Mass there, but very tiny town. And she said, because they sell that real good food after Mass. you never know what's going to get them in the door, huh?
Well, you do what you have to do, and whatever works. And that, of course, is, again, going back to what we were saying about St. Patrick and the church. The church is, and maybe this is a bit of a problem we have today, that, you know, it used to be growing up, in some ways in Chicago still, I think, you know, you belong to the parish and you identify yourself as but the parish now, not as much maybe as it was in the past, but the parish actually for many people was their life. It wasn't just the mass itself, but there was dinners and there was sports and there was you name it. I mean, it circled around the parish and your life centered around this whole thing, and you knew your people and you counted in that parish and you had a place in that parish.
Yep.
But unfortunately now, to some certain extent, maybe with social media and one thing or another, we're all over the place and nobody knows anybody, and you don't have to be connected with any particular location to have a good life. And in fact, you may even find yourself going all sorts of places for the things that you want.
My late brother-in-law grew up in South Philadelphia, and he would tell me that people didn't ask you what neighborhood you lived in; they'd ask you what parish you belonged to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just. And it's still that way. And so I think some of the big cities in the East, I think there's some of that in Buffalo and certainly in Philadelphia and Chicago, where you still have some ethnic neighborhoods, not a lot, but a little bit, but much more so than in the West.
Well, there's that. But still, it's surprising the parishes still have quite a little bit of life to them, and people, especially I see here at the cathedral when I'm on the masses, the Hispanic people, and they like to hang around after mass. And I know it's sort of hard now with the laws and stuff of that to have the food outside, but certainly where they can have it, they enjoy that and fellowship and so on. And it's amazing how the faith unites people. I was walking in last night to do the Spanish 6 o'clock mass at the cathedral, and I saw these people getting out of their car, and lo and behold, there was a priest getting out of the car. And I'm thinking to myself, well, who's this guy? I've never seen him before. And anyway, he introduced himself as Father Victor. He was visiting with some people here in Sacramento. He's from Guatemala.
Hmm.
And so, of course, I asked him, can celebrate and so on. And so he does. And so he had all his papers with him and all that to show that he was legit. And stuff. So, anyway, he gave a beautiful homily, to people. And again, of course, the majority probably of the Hispanic people at Mass were from Mexico, but they'd be from other places as well, but mostly Mexico. But they were able to relate to this man from Guatemala, and it was a beautiful indication of the unity of the church, and they were all big family, and his accent would be a little bit different from the Mexican accent, of course, but even some words would be different too.
Sure.
But they were all able to relate well. So that's a beautiful part of church as well.
Yeah, I remember on a family vacation being in the little town of Toppenish, Washington, fruit-growing region, and we went to Mass on Sunday morning. We'd spent the Saturday night there in a motel, and they only had a Spanish language mass, and we obviously were strangers in the parish, and obviously everybody noticed with our four little kids, and we must have had 30 people accompany us outside the church and say, here we're having breakfast, and this is what we have, and you're welcome. Come on in. We'd love to meet you. We'd love to hear your story. We'd love to tell you about our town and our parish and what we do. And they were just, they took such great pride, but were just so generous.
Well, the Hispanic people are that, and when you say celebrate Hispanic Mass, is just a great joy. By the way, just on a little different subject here, I just noticed recently that 60% of all small businesses and new creative job things that are created are in the Latino community.
Wow. This would be in California?
Yeah, well, in the country, I think.
In the country. Wow, that's amazing.
And certainly in California. And I think it's an indication of the hardworking Hispanic people, they do not here to take advantage or to get freebies. In fact, one of the things they're very strong on is the opportunity to work and opportunity to make a living and you know, things like socialism and stuff like that. Don't want anything to do with it.
Well, it's very typical of most immigrant communities in this country is they're here to work.
Yeah,
they're here for the opportunity.
Yeah, I remember a man, he's dead now, but he was a parishioner up at when I was up in the north part of the diocese, and he told me that he had come from Holland and that he was frustrated there with the rules and regulations and too much government, as it were. And so he came here, and, well, John De Jong, he was just one of the greatest workers I ever met in my life, and he actually became the groundsman there for our church, Sacred Heart in Anderson. And, I mean, he just would do the work of three men in a day, and nothing was too much, and just a very, very fervent Catholic man and totally committed to the faith, and his wife, Nell, as well. And so I have just that memory of hardworking individual wanting to do his part and be creative, and a tremendous commitment to both God and country and the hard work. Indeed.
So did the Irish, I know we're past St. Patrick's Day now, but did the Irish celebrate St. Patrick's Day, or is that an American holiday?
Oh, it's very much an Irish holiday too. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's a national holiday, and there's church, of course, but there's all sorts of marches, and every community around the country would have some sort of celebrations and highlighting their community. And actually, it's a bit difficult in Northern Ireland, but of course, obviously, St. Patrick came in the 4th century and was around long before any of these divisions we have.
Right.
So at one time, the whole country was, and so obviously celebrated a little bit different from Catholic to Protestant, but all religious people, all Christian people in Ireland would have their faith basically come from St. Patrick.
Yeah, and what the Catholic population of Northern Ireland is about a third now?
Oh, I think it's getting more, almost close to half.
Oh, really?
And so there's a lot of repercussions from that, and
mm-hmm.
Because there's a huge problem going on right there now with the Brexit thing.
Mm-hmm.
Northern Ireland basically voted against Brexit.
Right.
So they, of course, want to be part of the United Kingdom. And so then they're having these rules. So it's just a mess because I want to have the rules, but I don't want to have the rules. And, you know, some of the rules actually are almost making them a bit un-British, but they're proud of their British. And so they're just caught in a bind. And so there's been a lot of negotiation. And there's a good settlement, I think, coming up, almost done now. And I think President Biden is going to be over there on Good Friday to celebrate what will be 25 years of what's called the Good Friday Agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And this particular squabble that's going on now between Europe and England, or Britain, Great Britain, and so on. They're trying to resolve that. But certainly the climate there is changing, and of course the lack of religion there, like we were talking about earlier, that in some ways is a good thing, not a good thing in general, but in this specific thing that, you know, maybe the emphasis of you know, you're Catholic and I'm Protestant and we couldn't even speak to each other. That sort of has lessened some, but of course there's still all sorts of challenges. A lot of those things, as we know, often come down to economics, and in some ways those with the British connections had more going for them economically than those with the Irish Catholic connections and so on. But that has changed quite a bit. You know, it used to be you couldn't get a good job if you were Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they recognized if your name was Eileen or Nora or Patrick or something like that, then you're sort of pigeonholed right there and segregated just from your name. So that seems to be changing quite a bit in even the sports world. What's the most amazing thing in Ireland is that, you know, you have Northern Ireland and Southern Ireland, and there's 32 counties in the whole country.
Mm-hmm.
And on almost everything, they are divided, except, amazingly, in the game of rugby.
Yes.
And it's all one Irish team.
I did not know that. That's shocking.
And they won the Grand Slam, as they call it, the Six Nations that compete every winter. And they won it this particular year. And they won it in Dublin. And the final game was against England.
Oh.
And so you have all these Northern Ireland Protestants and Unionists who are so pro-England, and they are cussing out those English all the time during that game.
Oh, that's
so. For that
one
game, they hate those English people and are bound and determined that we're going to win. And in this particular case, they did. So that's sort of hilarious.
That sounds like a movie. I mean, I was unaware of that. That's amazing.
You can read up on that, the Irish victory. And actually, the World Cup of rugby is coming up this summer, and Ireland are considered to be the favorites to win it. You know, it's almost impossible for anyone to win it except for New Zealand.
Right.
New Zealand called the All Blacks.
The All Blacks.
Well, they are the greatest in the world and always win these things. And
of course, there is a great movie about that.
Yes. But the last year, actually, in some big events, the Irish beat them, and now the great test is going to be in the World Cup rugby finals coming up. It could well be that the final game would be between Ireland and the All Blacks. We have all that to look forward to.
You know, speaking of sports and Irish, and you're saying people notice the name was Eileen, or that our son, his first name is Mick, and he was playing Little League a few years ago. He's a senior in high school now, but he was playing Little League baseball. And the way the results get into the newspaper is the coach will call into the newspaper and say, you know, this is what happened, and so-and-so had a hit, or so-and-so hit a home run or something. And so he called into the coach called into the newspaper and said that Mick Dunning had had a single and a walk and had pitched two innings, and the reporter on the other end said, "Does Mick Dunning have a first name?"
Yes, that's a good one. Yeah. So now we have to call you Robert Mick Dunning.
Yes,
huh?
Right.
Yeah, I'll let the bishop know that. I'll see him tomorrow. That you've changed your name and
yes,
that you need to make a check out to Robert McDonald.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my gosh, that's a good one, yeah.
Yeah.
So here we are in Lent and moving fast towards the great time of Palm Sunday and Holy Week. You know, I will just encourage everybody, all of you viewers and listeners, if you can, to just really look at your calendar, if you could, for that. I think Catholics have a good sense of Palm Sunday. They know it's a special time and very good attendance on Palm Sunday. And then, of course, those great holy times coming up of Holy Thursday and Good Friday, and then that quiet day of Holy Saturday waiting. And if anybody gets an opportunity, I know it's a lot to ask maybe, but gosh, if you could go to the After Dark ceremony,
yep,
on Holy Saturday night, Peter, of course, with the bishop, but any parish, they all have it at the same time. They all have to have it at the same time. It has to be after dark. And it's a little bit long, a couple of hours, but on the other end, you know, if you went to a movie, you'd be that long or more. And you can go out for a good dinner and a couple of drinks, you know, you'd be out for quite a long time. So anyway, look at your bulletins and see what the time is. And if you just go to that with a real open heart and asking what God is working on your life, then it could be a nurturing experience, because the rituals and the whole way, the lighting of the candle, readings, and then, of course, it was people confirmed or coming into the church. That's a beautiful thing. So anyway, I hope that'll be a great blessing at Holy Week.
Yeah, I remember saying to somebody that that's one of the masses I've cried at, even though I didn't have a family member coming into the church. It's so beautiful. Well, the whole thing is beautiful, but that part too, to see the joy, and that these are, as a cradle Catholic, we didn't experience that. You know, we just grew up with the faith. My mom was a convert as a young woman, and to see people who have willingly chosen this faith that I grew up in is a real emotional moment. I would really encourage people. I know it's a long mass, but big deal. You know, it's a long, beautiful mass, it's interesting, when I was growing up, daylight saving didn't start until April, and frequently, sometimes after Easter. So now it's a really late mass because it has to be over after sundown. Why is that? That it's like half an hour after sundown when it starts, something like that?
Well, a little bit anyway. Sort of make sure it's dark, so they give the times generally. I think it's 8 o'clock or 8:15 or something, maybe.
Uh-huh.
This particular year. So it is a beautiful thing, and in fact, if you go to that mass, it's almost like an opera. It's almost like a movie, in the sense that it unfolds bit by bit by bit by bit. And, you know, if you're that type of person who gets into the moment and sees the variety of things, like you mentioned about the people coming into the church, but, you know, the actions of the bishop, the pastor, whichever it is, and depending where you are. But you can make it a great spiritual thing. And, of course, nowadays we say, you know, that people are not as involved in church maybe as much as they were. But I think those who are really committed. And when you see a thing like that, it renews your faith.
Sure.
And do you feel like this lady I was telling you about earlier, who really had this experience of her faith, and now she doesn't go around, you know, beating up on people with it. But certainly now that if anything comes up in conversation over coffee or wherever it might be, in the workplace or wherever it is, she's nice and kind, but very firm and very clear. And so if somebody says, something derogatory or critical, she will say, "Now, oh, where did you find that? How did you come to that conclusion? Well, what do you mean, such and such? Would you like me to share what the Catholic position is? You really, to tell you the truth, you really have it screwed up. And you really need to, if you want to, but if you really want to know, I can tell you what the true position is, because what you said a minute ago is not what Catholics believe. And if you want to be decent and fair about it, you have some obligation to listen to me to tell you the truth." And sometimes, of course, people will say, "Oh, no, I don't. What do you know?" But on the other hand, some will say, "Well, fair enough. If I was out of order, maybe I don't know that much about it. Maybe I was just going with stereotypes. Tell me more." And so that can be a beautiful thing. And
sure,
I think that's going to be the future of the church, that those who really wanted, certainly a choice now. And, you know, if you don't go to church next Sunday, your neighbors wouldn't know or wouldn't care to a great extent. But you do it for the Lord, and you do it because it's a great blessing, and brings you a peace and blessing that nothing else in the world can.
Yeah, and exactly, perfectly said. Very well said. That's where I find the unabridged catechism is my best friend, because it's I can talk to a person and say, whether it's even, you know, to overcome a misconception, as you say, or just to share, and I say, "Okay, here's what we believe about this," And here's why, whether it's just war or death penalty or abortion or marriage or you know, welcoming the stranger, no matter what it is, here's what we believe, and it's very logical, it's very easy to understand, and there are all kinds of citations, many of them biblical, but some of them from encyclicals or various other things, from some of the saints maybe, but it's all very logical and very supported. It's not, it's clear this, oh, this isn't made up out of thin air. You know, people came up with a whole bunch of rules and you just got to follow them. And I think that's probably the biggest, and you would know much better than I, one of the biggest misconceptions about the church is that we're, as I know Bishop Soto has articulated this, we're not the church of no. We're not the church of you can't. We're not the church of, we're the church of doing. We're the church of giving. We're the church of being out in the world and helping the world. And we're not just this bunch of rules that we have to follow, but I think outsiders really do look at it that way.
Yeah, for a whole bunch of reasons, and I suppose it's easy when you don't understand, and there's a certain amount of, you know, commitment that one has to make. I mean, if, you know, it's like if you go to, as I'm sure you do, workshops on your, in your job, you know, it's communication world and such. You have to go, and sometimes maybe you have to change some of your styles and and learn new things and say, you know, that maybe the things that were done 5 years ago aren't that good anymore and not working. You have to learn new, you know, even machines or ways of carrying out your program. So I think people have to be open to that, and that's not always easy because they like to just take the easy course. But as you say, the faith is so logical, so reasonable, and also in many cases so easy. Maybe easy isn't the best word, but you know, with the power of our of God and the Holy Spirit and stuff. I mean, a lot of the things that we're asked to do as Catholics, you know, to go to Mass every Sunday. I mean, geez, there's so many Masses around. If you don't have enough at your own parish, just Google something and you'll find within your probably a radius of where you live, certainly in Sacramento, in the city of Sacramento, I mean, there's probably 20 Masses you could go to on any given Sunday that would be 5, 10, 15 minutes from your home.
Yeah, and maybe 10 different languages, you know. I mean, you've got, you know, it's just I was telling a friend the other day who wasn't Catholic, I said, see, the great thing about daylight saving time is if you forget to set your clock and you're Catholic, and you end up being an hour late for 8 a.m. Mass, well, guess what? You're just in time for 9 a.m. Mass.
Oh, yes, 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 and there's all of that for sure. So, and then, you know, in general, maybe I'm privileged and have a different view of things, but certainly the, you know, the kindness of people and church and, I've just been blessed with that, and I think I see Father Michael, the rector of the cathedral, and all sorts of other priests doing wonderful things and so on, and, you know, these reconciliation services now that we're having all over the
right.
place, pretty much one every night someplace. I mean, again, you go, and you've been away for 10 years or 20 years or whatever it be, and, well, you have this sin or that sin, and, you know, you're treated with great respect, with great dignity, kindness, and to go in there and tell your story and then to be forgiven by the Lord through the work of the priest. I mean, what a joyful thing that is. And again, no beating up on the person or giving them a hard time, you know. The new book, for instance, is out now on the new rite of penance and so on, the new one by the bishops. That's a beautiful thing, and again, the compassion and mercy of God is there. And unfortunately, our society is not a merciful society; it's sort of a harsh society, and
growing more so every day, it seems.
Well, I think that would be part of you know, not having religion either, because certainly, I mean, just it's elementary that if you're some sort of religious person, certainly if you're a Catholic person and you're mean and nasty, then you're just the opposite of everything. You can't be. It's just, well, you can be, but you're out of order because you shouldn't be. The whole faith should be about humility and compassion. By the way, I was reading a most interesting story maybe along those lines of St. Catherine of Siena.
Uh-huh.
She was in her church one day, and this was the wintertime in Tuscany, Italy, and freezing cold, and this young man came in pretty much naked into the church to get some help. And he came to her and he said, I'm freezing to death and I need something to wear to warm me up. And she said, well, just go over to the house on the outside the church a little bit and I will be over in a little while and I will take care of you. But he was insistent that he couldn't wait that long. And so she, amazingly, put her hands up under her robe and was able to free up her undergarment, sleeveless undergarment she had on, and she lets it drop down to her feet, and she said, now you're covered. And the next night, and this is sort of a story that you often hear from Martin of Tours. Yeah.
Oh, sure.
He had the same experience. But anyway, she did that, and the night after, as Catherine was praying, Jesus appeared to her dressed in her tunic.
Oh, wow.
But now it's littered with ornaments. He spoke to her and said, yesterday you clad my nakedness with this tunic.
Wow.
So, isn't that a beautiful story? And that's so Catholic. And, I wonder sometimes if people avert to, with the annual Catholic appeal, but we also have all these other appeals. Pretty much every month there's an appeal for something, someplace in some part of the world, or Catholic Relief or Catholic Charities or whatever. And I think our people, really, many of them see that as a beautiful way of putting into practice the gospel of the Lord, that when I was hungry, he gave me to eat, and when mm-hmm. I was thirsty, he gave me to drink. But I thought people would like this story of the great St. Catherine of Siena and her garment and how Jesus came to her in appreciation.
That's a wonderful story. You know, I'd urge someone who wonders about the faith why don't you just accompany a couple of the St. Vincent de Paul volunteers when they go out on a call and see what they're about and see what they do.
You know, that is an amazing organization. I'm blessed to be involved in the spiritual director. But
mm-hmm.
The meetings of the St. Vincent de Paul are different than all other meetings that I attend. And it seems, and I haven't been able to see them do anything different. I always think they will. But, you know, in a lot of meetings, even church meetings or all sorts of meetings, there's always somebody who is sort of difficult, or people who are negative,
mm-hmm.
and critical of this. And but I never see that in those meetings. And there's always, they have a wonderful motto, which I don't hear in anything else, increase in Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Their motto is to increase in Christ. And I think that in itself sort of gives the game away for them, that they're wanting to grow in the Lord. And then, of course, they have this experience that when they go out to meet the people, that it's meeting Christ and that it's a spiritually enriching thing, and not just to sort of throw some food at somebody and say, here, but to actually not only bring the food or whatever is being given, but to bring the heart of Christ.
Yeah. They don't have an office. They don't tell you, oh, come down to our office and see us. It's the other way around. They go out to the home.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. And you ever get a chance, anybody, to go out to their store there on Watt Avenue?
Yes. Oh, wow.
I mean, it's been renovated now, and maybe you could go out there, Bob, and do your show from there one day.
Oh, that's a great idea. That's a wonderful idea.
Yeah, yeah. Especially now, they should get that store renovated completely in the next month or two, I think. They did a lot of it already, but there's another piece to be done. But Joe Albs is easy to contact, and I can always get you his number if you want it. So he's the president, but...
oh, yes, I know Joe.
Yeah. And so... that's an example of the church in action and the faith of the people. And again, listeners, if you ever want something to do really good with your life, think about St. Vincent de Paul and maybe joining in your parish and you're helped, you know, you're shown how to do it. And it's not that hard to do, actually. But, you know, sometimes we often wonder, well, I don't know how to do that. I'm not able to do that. I wouldn't know what to do. Well, don't worry about it. It's, you'll be helped to, and you'll be put, you know, with a person who is a mentor and who is skilled with it. And so you just go, and all you have to do is just go, and the Lord will show you the rest how to do it.
Yeah, it's just a tremendous, tremendous organization. And of course, next month, shortly after Easter, they will have their annual Dinner for the Poor, which is always packed. And
oh, indeed.
Always an inspirational evening.
And this year, the speaker and sort of center of the thing will be Father Dan Madigan.
Yes.
So that'll be an experience in itself. And Dan is getting old now, but he still packs a punch, and he'll have something to say. And as I said to him the other day, don't worry about what you say, Dan. It's just going to be your presence there, and the people will remember all you've done and beautiful work you've done in the food bank and many other ways. And so your presence is more important than anything you do or say.
I remember at the most recent, and I'm sure you were there, at the Bishop Gagos dinner last September. And Dan stood up to just say a few words, if you will, and the place was just spellbound. They didn't want him to sit down.
Indeed. Indeed. So that's a beautiful thing. By the way, I should maybe share with your listeners a few good ideas here before we wrap up. The other night I was at a confirmation that was given by Bishop Soto, so I can steal his ideas. He had five wonderful things for to suggest to the young people being confirmed, and I think they could apply to any of us. The first one was to pray every day a little bit anyway. Pray as much as you can. Just say some prayers, have a prayerful attitude, spend a little time in quiet and so on. So that was a big emphasis, but was number one, was to pray. And the second one that he had, which I think would help all of us, is to read the Bible, to become familiar with it, especially the Gospels and the 27 letters of the New Testament and Paul's writings and St. Peter's writings and so on. So that was a very beautiful one. The other one was, I'd be telling you something we've been saying along, was have good friends. Mm-hmm. And don't get yourself mixed up with bad friends, because, you know, monkey see, monkey do, and we're influenced by the people around us. And if you and I do a lot of stuff together, Bob, and we're both trying to be good people, then we will support each other and encourage each other, and we'll be able to build each other up. And then his fourth one was to go to Mass every weekend, Saturday or Sunday, unless you're sick or some great thing gets in the way. But generally speaking, you should be able to make it most of the Sundays throughout the year. And the final one, tying in with Vincent de Paul, was to do some generous action in some way every day, whether it's a small thing like, you know, helping your wife or your husband with the cleaning after dinner or vacuuming or just a kind thing that you do for your child or they do for you in the home or, you know, your coworker or just situations that you find yourself in, just being doing a generous act. And, of course, if you meet somebody, maybe that's cooler to give them a little help. But those were five great points that I thought the bishop made in a very short sweet talk the other night at Our Lady of Assumption confirmation. And so I thought I'd just share them with everybody so that if it was good enough for the kids and good enough for the bishop, it's good enough for us.
That's very good, and you timed that perfectly. I wrote those all down. I'm going to take them home. And Father Kiernan, always a joy to talk with you. Thanks for all you do, and blessings to you and everybody you touch.
Blessing to your family and to all the people that you touch with your Bishop's Hour. And I know this is only God will know probably what the Bishop's Hour has achieved over the last 24 years because so many people hear it, and maybe some people take 2% of it, and some people take 40% of it, and some people take 80% of it. And it changes their lives, so thank God for that. So God bless you and bless all our listeners here today and give us more strength now to really finish up strong with Lent. You know, sometimes in confession people will tell me that they screwed up and they lost their, you know, they had this plan and then they fell off. And I say, well, don't worry about that so much. Whatever happened, happened. But now pick it up again.
Yes.
Pick it up again, even if it's only for the remaining 2 weeks or whatever it is. Don't just say, well, because I messed it up and didn't fulfill all I said I would, now I won't do anything. No, don't do that.
That's right.
Now, if whatever intentions you had, or even make a new intention if you didn't have one, and pick up something for the remaining time and then the Holy Week and so on. So God bless you, listeners, with that. And may it be a wonderful remaining Lent and a glorious, beautiful resurrection at Easter.
Amen. Thanks so much, Father.
Okay. Blessings.
Yeah, blessings. Take care. That's Father Michael Kiernan. Just always love to talk with him. Just so much wisdom there and so much good faith. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless everyone. We'll talk with you again soon.